Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we hear the second part of the interview with Eve Lorgan, author of Love Bite and the Dark Side of Cupid. But first, we revisit an excerpt from a past interview with Dr. Judy Wood. She's a former professor of mechanical engineering, and in this particular interview, we talked about the educational system, critical analysis, and problem solving. Let's have a listen. But we're going to focus in on something that you have touched upon in past interviews, and that is critical thinking skills, but within the context of your work. Could you tell listeners why it's important to have this ability and to be critical in evaluating information surrounding the events on September 11th?
Well, it first comes to mind when I stop to think, why did so few people, on 9/11, why did so few people question it? And didn't they look and say, what's wrong with this picture? But instead, they were easily sucked in and went with the herd, the flow of, grab your pitchfork, going after the bad guy, and already had the case solved. I'm wondering, why is it even, my colleagues in front of the same television set in the faculty conference room were sucked into that? What is the difference? What is causing this? And I came up with three separate things that keep people from seeing what's going on, right, even if it's right before them.
Mm-hmm.
One is the problem-solving skills, the critical thinking. We'll come back to that. And the second one is groupthink. If everyone else thinks one way and you don't, you start to wonder if you're wrong.
Oh, I see. That's a powerful influence.
Very. It's peer pressure. And even for me, I didn't see what everybody else saw. I saw a building coming apart, unraveling like a sweater. And these people didn't see it. Well, is something wrong with me, or is it with them? Or what's the difference? And I went up to my office and started making calculations. And I kept looking for what the difference was. And I couldn't find it. But unlike most people, I don't agree with the bandwagon because it's the majority. I have to know the reason. And so the third thing is the implications of what they're seeing. If they can't handle the implications, they're telling their mind they don't want to see it.
Okay, so you have problem solving, groupthink, and then implications.
Implications. Any one of those things will prevent the person from seeing what's before them. One or more. It could be a combination of things. But let's focus on the problem solving. So it's any of these three things that really cause people to not see what is being shown on TV and say, what? Okay, with the problem solving skills, let's start out. If I tell you the answer is 27, am I right or wrong?
No one would know.
Right, because you need to know what the problem is I'm solving. If I tell you the answer is 27, the answer to what? You have to understand what the problem is that I'm solving in order to understand if it's a right or wrong answer. So if you just give someone the answer, and people in our culture, maybe it's partly human nature, tend to start with the answer and work backwards, and they cherry-pick the data that'll feed the right answer. If I tell you the answer is 27, then you go, okay, maybe it's 3 times 9, or you're speculating what the problem was. And if you speculate what the problem was, you're going to give data that will support your answer, and then it reinforces itself.
Now, okay, in the context of your work, can you describe this a little further?
Right. This is a simplification of it, that, starting out with the answer instead of defining the problem. When it comes to 9/11, it becomes very important to first define the problem. Getting the steps in the right order, and it's all about the order. And I'll give another analogy. If someone tells you the numbers 4, 5, and 3, well, if you add 4 and 5 and multiply them by 3, or if you add 4 to the multiplication of 5 and 3, you get different answers. It's the order of those steps that becomes important. Okay, and with 9/11, the typical thing people start out with is a theory. And then they go looking for the data to support it. So if you say, let's see, it's with the various theories, it's fire or it's thermite or it's dynamite or nukes or mini nukes or one of those, then they go collect the data that supports whatever their theory is. So what they're doing is imagining the solution and then looking for the problem for which that is the solution.
That was an excerpt from a past interview with Dr. Judy Wood. She's the author of the book, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. She's been a regular guest on the show, and so has her colleague, novelist and writer Professor Eric Larson. He wrote A Nation Gone Blind, America in an Age of Simplification and Deceit, and The Skull of Yorick, The Emptiness of American Thinking at a Time of Grave Peril, Studies in the Cover-Up of 9/11. In a past interview, we talked about directed energy weapons being used during events such as natural disasters or during war, where conventional weapons were being detonated, almost to camouflage their use. So you really wouldn't know, unless you were an expert, to look for the signature of a directed energy weapon. In Professor Larson's fifth and final essay, he writes, "I think that the fault that the great propaganda machine is still working is our fault. I think that the fault lies with you, me, with us. It lies with us thanks to our impotence thinking and our impotence writing, where sounding good passes itself off as doing good. The fault lies with us thanks to our intellectual laziness and to our obscenely bad educations. It lies with us because Searle was right. We are so logic-challenged that we behave like children and think we're wizards. It lies with us because we're really, really bad at science. We don't understand it. We don't know what it is. We don't know how it works. The fault lies with us because we're unsophisticated, unobservant, illogical, and unscientific enough to have been played for suckers. First by one side, then by another side, then by a third. For more than a decade, quarreling and fussing among ourselves, while our wealth is stolen, our nation dismantled, and our culture turned ever more surely to swill." In past interviews, listeners may recall the work of Dr. Joe Slate and Dr. Konstantin Korotkov in measuring intention and studying the human auric field. Dr. Joe Slate is the author of Psychic Vampires, Protection from Energy Predators and Parasites. His research into human energy systems has been funded by the United States Army and the Parapsychology Foundation of New York. Do the rules of parasitism extend into the spirit realm and the cosmos? We reference that research and also interference as described in Carissa Conti's past two interviews. The foundation is set to grasp the deeper research conducted by Eve Lorgan, who wrote two books, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. The books examine case studies of alien abductees, obsessive relationships, and interference. From puppy love to violent divorces, Eve Lorgan demonstrates how aliens may be somehow involved with orchestrating these dramas. We'll also talk about the work of her colleagues, the late Barbara Bartholik and Carla Turner, who have uncovered some of the most powerful evidence on the negative aspects of alien visitation, through examining many individual abductee experiences. Eve Lorgan, welcome back to the second hour of the interview.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
We left off with you describing interferences that had occurred in your life while producing these two books and doing your research. If listeners didn't catch that, can you let us know briefly about what these two books are about, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid?
Okay, well, the first book, The Love Bite, which came out in around 2000, is primarily about how love relationships have been staged, engineered, or disrupted and interfered with in some way by what we think are aliens or ETs. And most all the people in that book were people who had multiple alien encounter histories. So they were classic abductee, quote, experiencers who had regular interactions with some kind of ET or alien being. So that was primarily more about how the aliens are somehow setting up engineering, you know, bonding people, putting people together in these love obsession dramas, or breaking up relationships and then setting them up with the partners that they choose for them. That actually happens a lot with people who've had, you know, multiple alien abduction histories. Their alien handlers tend to choose who they bond with or get married and have kids with, or it actually happens a lot until they wake up and maybe start taking charge. Okay, so in the second book, The Dark Side of Cupid, I ended up getting many more cases over the years of people who reported what they call, I think I've got a love bite kind of thing, and it feels like this relationship's being interfered with, and all these strange things are happening. There's this paranormal stuff and really strong psychic linking, but I'm not a, you know, abductee. I'm not somebody who has UFO encounters or anything like that. And it could be normal people who just have these really unusually paranormally influenced or interfered with relationships where there is a dynamic of it being interfered with, set up, or broken up, or where there's some form of what they call psychic vampirism happening, or they're noticing another entity involved with maybe their partner or just in the general vicinity or surrounding that relationship. So there's actually two different kinds of populations. Although in the second book there were people who did have alien encounters in their histories, but not all of them did or claimed to. So I guess that's the difference. And plus the second book, really, I really go into more of the dynamics of one of these kinds of relationships that involve the magical supernatural area and also the energy vampirism characteristic.
Yes, it's just a fascinating read. The first book I'm going through right now, and I read the second book, which was kind of scary, but quite interesting. And I know you get asked this a lot, and that is the difference between a regular messed up relationship that goes south and a love bite.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I guess it depends on the characteristics of the relationship. And of course, in the book, I talk about what are the, you know, red flags of one of these relationships and what kinds of things happen. And really, the determining factor is there's a lot of paranormal, supernatural, and just unlikely things that will happen in what I call a love bite or a dark side of Cupid. And there's just way too many things that are just unusual, and there may be, you know, UFO encounters that happen, or strange precognitive dreams, or just a very, very powerful connection with someone that's out of the ordinary and just doesn't explain, let's say, the connection or obsession you may have with them. So it seems to suggest there's something else interfering or involved with it. Although some people come to me and say, oh, I think I've met my soulmate, this is a twin flame, but then, you know, there's all these problems, and, you know, I suspect this is one of those engineered things, but it really has to play itself out for you to really know. And so I'd say a normal relationship is not going to have all the weird paranormal supernatural things and the observations of what I call the third-party entity interfering.
Now,
in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, right. There's so much to this. And I appreciate you summarizing this, because I know that's not easy to do, but I know you've been doing these interviews and articulating the nature of this bizarre area that you've been researching. And I heard in a past interview that you had gone through a list of various levels of alien beings and their interactions with humans. If you could please run down that list for listeners.
Okay, so it probably stems from one of the interviews that I did with an Italian colleague. It was a colleague of Dr. Corrado Malanga of Italy, who Corrado Malanga had done probably 25, 30 years of research on the UFO and alien abduction phenomenon from his own standpoint of investigations. And he's like a PhD in organic chemistry and also a professor at the University of Pisa, so he really knows his stuff and uses scientific method. And one of the things that he discovered amongst many things, of course, he called it, you know, alien interferences, which really suggests a lot of what I found, that there's interferences on actually many different levels. And he actually described the levels of interferences from, let's say, a physical abduction where medical exams or implants may have been put in, down to other levels which involve, let's say, the consciousness of the human, where they implanted what he calls alien memories or alien parasites. Oh, another level would be transferring their consciousness into a different kind of body, or levels of parasitism, and levels of beings that interact in a hierarchy. And so he found that there was a hierarchy of beings that were reported that, let's say, on the lowest level of what you usually hear in alien abduction testimonies, sometimes it's involved with, let's say, a UFO craft, and the craft may land, or and then these beings come out and take the person and do some kind of exam. Oftentimes the beings are reported to be the typical grays with the black eyes, and they may be small, and they may be mechanical and robotic. And there's actually many different species of grays that people have seen. They're the most common ones seen. So those are actually the ones that are on the primary lower level of what he calls the hierarchy, because they're the workers that basically come and pick you up and bring you back. And they may also do some of the medical experiments or different experiments, but sometimes there's other beings involved within the levels of interference. And so Malanga actually described this. And some of it I agree with based on what I've seen, too, that there was other levels, like with, let's say, reptilian beings, or these beings that would be maybe standing in the corner or being kind of hidden, and they would be maybe these cloaked robe types with a hood, and they would be the ones who was like the head boss who told the others what to do. And so in some of these, they may be, let's say, a Draco or a reptilian or an insectoid, or what he called the Orus Ra figure. So he actually had a categorization of the different aliens based on what they do and how they interact, and what he felt was like a hierarchy. So basically, you know, the grays were the lower level, and then there was a type of human Nordic type with five fingers, because there's different types that have different numbers of fingers, obviously. And then there would be, I guess, the reptilians and the frog-like reptilians who had sometimes Nazi uniforms. And then there would be the insectoids, and then there was also another species called the oranges, which would have like a very tanned orange skin and a slit pupil, and they had like funny hair that was kind of strange, but they had a more of a human appearance. And then as we moved up the hierarchy, you know, there was the insectoids was a little bit, he thought that they were a little bit above the reptilians, but sometimes considered, I don't think the reptilians consider themselves under anybody, you know, because that's how they are. But The Dracos were actually on top of that, of the insectoids. And then there was something that they called Orus Ra, which was, it's a type of being that takes the form of a chicken-like body that would have this round thing on its skull and have a long kind of bird beaky thing. And it would wear this like cowl-necked cape kind of thing and have these protuberances on their shoulders that made it look like they were wings. But it's a type of being that takes a form but actually comes from another universe, according to Malanga. Mm-hmm. And that there's he calls it the dark universe, or the, like, a second, I don't know if he calls it a bi-dimensional universe, that where the being's essence, let's say, who hides in certain forms, their true essence is like a black dot or a shadow. So they're a type of shadow being that literally takes a certain alien form, like the Orus Ra chicken-like figure, in order to interact with us here in 3D.
Oh, okay.
So they actually don't, it's not their true form. Like, there's another one he calls the Growl. And the reason why they called it the Growl is, This is the Italians. They had their own name for these beings, and I always thought it was interesting because I said, wait a minute, you know, that sounds a lot like what's happening with maybe some reptilians when, let's say, there's a possession kind of thing going on, then they just exhibit, like, anger and fighting and growling, like, you know, like they'll clench their jaw and make this funny face.
Right.
And so they called them the Growl beings, but what was, I guess, similar between the Growl and the Orus Ra was that both of these beings who may take on certain forms, like the Growl would actually take I think, a six-fingered blonde cyborg type of body, okay? But what was really inside of it was the black shadow beings that come from this other universe that's archetypically behind our universe. So certain types of beings who had this shadow, black shadow essence, they would take on a different form in order to interact with us, let's say, when they interact with us physically or maybe even astrally. But they will parasite us in certain places in our energy body. And so he discovered that these ones actually had more power and could parasite us in certain ways. So it kind of corresponds with what I thought was the Draco, because the Draco, from many reports, even in the Super Soldier reports, for example, that some beings, even the reptilians, have wars against the Dracos, even though the Dracos seem to be the ones in control, appearing in control, they're the ones that are the problem. But in other forms that I'm starting to recognize in other systems of study, like, I know I hate mixing these things, because in, let's say, the Aboriginal holographic kinetics study, where people are doing clearings of different interdimensional interferences, mm-hmm. they may have a hierarchy of different kinds of beings that interfere or take on a type of parasitism or possession within the human body or energy field. And so reptilians are part of that, Dracos are part of that, gargoyles are part of that, and then the highest one on the hierarchy are what they call the winged serpents. And so the winged serpents almost remind me of some aspect of the Orus Ra, which take a form, but they're the highest. They remain hidden. They're very well hidden. They tend to be the ones who are extremely smart and have a better handle on religious and spiritual control. So the reptilians are also known with people who've had, let's say, ritual abuse MKUltra histories, where they remember being in rituals where in some of these rituals they literally invoke reptilian beings from these other dimensional realities.
Oh, great.
So there's many different cross-references of these kinds of beings that have similarities and behaviors that are observed even in the abduction phenomena. So there is a hierarchy of sorts.
Right. I wonder if the military is conducting these rituals as well.
Yes, yes. In fact, the humans who, I mean, I believe that some of this started at least with respect to the military abduction, what we call the black meta technology, and how they're using assets under mind control in conjunction with aliens and alien technology. Some of these secrets were probably gotten to the military by people who knew them for thousands of years, who were from these ancient bloodlines, who had invoked and had connection and communications with some of these other dimensional beings for thousands of years. And they got these secrets of mind control and occult control through these occult families, who basically gave their secrets over to be used in military agendas, military and scientific agendas. So I think that's what's happening, and that because what we've uncovered in many MyLab reports, not all of them, is that there is an occult abuse factor. And there was one woman that I interviewed named Marit, who was a Scandinavian woman who was very, very aware and psychic and was being used in different capacities in her abduction experiences with military as well as aliens, Dracos, reptilians, greys, and many other beings that she observed within many of her experiences. And so one of the things that I wrote that actually got a lot of attention on the Avalon forum was the article called Orus Ra as the Archontic Parasite, because this Orus Ra figure, she was able to recognize in her experience, it might have been one of the reasons she contacted me, because I was showing some of Malanga's work and how he described this figure that would take on this chicken-like figure, but also have another characteristic that would take on different forms, like it would take on the snake form sometimes. And so in some of these ancient rituals, it appeared that this Orus Ra entity, which is really, quote, Ra, who's this black shadow or dot from this other dark universe, would literally parasite someone. And when someone became parasited with these really, really powerful high-level beings, they become super intelligent and super psychic, but it was like a cold, mean, kind of evil intelligence. And so this is what some of these high-level occult military people were basically doing and trying to do with their operatives to make them even more capable to carry out whatever operations they're using them for. And a lot of times they're using these really, really psychic people to carry out different functions, you know, among other things like medical experimentation. So it gets pretty creepy, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's super advanced. I looked at a PDF on your site that was produced by a French researcher who diagrammed the invisible chakra realms that a reptilian entity would manipulate.
This was
This was a really detailed image with measurements in millimeters around the human body, and the entities had been illustrated as different reptilian species. It was very, very specific, and I wondered how someone could get this level of detail. Could you explain what's going on with this illustration?
And actually, it was a French colleague who showed me, actually sent me the PDF that came from a book by a French clairvoyant and an energy worker who had written other books about his energy work. So what was interesting is the energy worker who was clairvoyant didn't know anything about alien abduction, reptilians, or anything. It was just based on his own clairvoyant perception of what he was able to observe in some people and their energy fields. And so he might have had equipment where he can do measurements in terms of, you know, how far out the energy body is extended and how the aura is shifted and the chakras get affected. So he did several diagrams that I have in this PDF file that shows actually what other clairvoyants have reported to me, like when they see, let's say, an entity that is from, I guess we could even say it's like the Growl or the Orus Ra or one of these kind that comes from the dark universe. One of the things that Malanga told me is that when it's one of these kinds, because it comes from a universe that's archetypically behind us, then when you observe it or sense it, it will be like it's behind you or overshadowing behind you, and that's how it's perceived, which I think is really interesting. And so this French clairvoyant, he did like a classic reptilian, and then he showed some like faces, what they look like in their more dense form. And then he also showed, which was pretty amazing, how the chakras are being manipulated by the hands or the energy of this reptilian. Like, I guess in this one photo, it shows him, not a photo, but a drawing, that is one of his hands is over the heart and the other one's over the solar plexus. In general, they could manipulate any of your chakras, but it's usually the sexual chakra, the solar plexus, the heart, sometimes the neck, and they can amplify your sexual drive as well. Which is really unfortunate. Actually, many of my labs do explain, actually report that. And then he's got one that looks like almost like an insectoid being, but the way he drew it reminds me of what is described with the Orus Ra being. It kind of has this really long bird beaky look, and you just have to, you know, look at the file on my website, and it's a different kind of being. Mm-hmm. And he went on to describe, you know, the insectoids, the reptilians. And then also another being, which was really strange. It was a strigoi. That's a type that he found out about. That's like a vampire type that makes a bite on the neck and lays eggs and does some weird stuff here. But, you know, I've seen drawings of this kind of being that he has from other abductees throughout my history where they perceive him this way. It's
oh,
pretty interesting.
Really?
Yeah, and this was years ago, and I don't have it on a PDF file, but I remember seeing pictures of this kind of being, and it's similar to the Orus Ra, but it's like a raptor almost, because it does have wings, but it's not a Draco, it's different. And these kind will also overshadow and parasite the energy field. In fact, one of the things that Malanga was able to find out through his studies was how exactly are they parasiting us and what part of our being. Like he said that the black shadow beings would affect the mind and the perceptions in the mind component, whereas other parasites, like the active alien memories, were implanted in the brain/mind, and then some entities would attach on to what they call the spirit component so that they can directly feed or act as an interface for the soul energy, because what they were really after was feeding on the soul energy and as a way to live through us. So we're like their form of immortality. So according to Malanga, that they would have what they call active alien memories, which is basically like a mind component zip file of all the memories of this particular alien being that's not in its normal body. And so they implant it in the brain/mind energy field of the abductee to basically hold it there until they find a body for it, so that you can actually access the memories of this other being within you when you have one of these things inside you, and that they may host many bodies over thousands of years. They may basically jump from one body to the next. And so that somebody who has one of these parasite things he calls an active alien memory, you could be picking up memories from not only the alien, but the hosts that it was in, thinking it's your memory. So it suggests a whole different view of a modification of reincarnation. When someone comes up with these memories, you have to ask, wait a minute, is this an implanted memory, or is this really yours?
We are speaking with Evie Lorgan about her books, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. We'll return after the break. Just now tuning in, we're speaking with Evie Lorgan about her books, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. This is really complicated.
It is.
But it reminds me of what happens in nature as well, where the ant crawls up to the top of the blade of grass and the cow eats the ant. It's the parasite-host relationships and the many different forms it takes. But I was wondering about the concept that you had brought up in a past interview about, could aliens also get abducted by other aliens?
I think so, yes, because there's some who seem to be under the domination of other races. Even reptilians have had skirmishes with Dracos where they've probably been taken prisoners or enslaved. So I think there are different things that happen with different races. I mean, there's so many different kinds of reports that people have, and some of them aren't as bad as others, or some of them are considered benevolent. And, you know, I just remain skeptical based on how I know they can manipulate perception and mind control people, and how they, you know, interfere with our energy field. It's really hard to know sometimes.
In one article on your website, you explored the work of Giuseppe Platania. How does the religious template of angels and demons lay over the concept of multiple species of aliens?
Okay. Well, according to Giuseppe, his research believes that many of the, the deities in our religions are actually the same kinds of beings responsible for some of the alien behaviors. He calls them extra-materialized entities. They can take on many different forms, and their primary thing is to feed off humanity in some way. Let's say the darker beings may, do blood sacrifice or eat human tissue or hearts, like some of these ancient Aztec rituals. And then there's other beings, all they really want is our love and devotion and attention for our prayers to go to them, and they feed off of that in some way. So there's a range depending on, you know, how they feed, basically. And that's how he perceives the different religious entities, that they're all just part of this game, basically, of feeding on humanity.
Oh, that was easy.
Well, it's similar to what Barbara Bartholik seemed to piece together in terms of, you know, even playing the good cop, bad cop thing with the Enki Enlil and the Anu. It can get really complicated. And, you know, I still think, as somebody living in this duality reality, that there is good and evil in this world, and there's good and bad things that happen based on how we perceive them. And so it really depends, you know, what kind of behaviors do these beings have and how do they affect us is the question we have to ask. And it's hard to be neutral when they're harming a family member or they're ruining a love relationship or preventing true love from happening. I mean, I think that some of them are just downright evil, and I'm not afraid to say it.
Well, it was very telling that that entity appeared to you after you were saying prayers.
Yes, yeah. He didn't like that at all. I thought that was interesting.
Well, it implies that the prayers were effective.
Or something, yes. And, you know, I've had more than one encounter with, you know, scary things like that, where, you know, praying for my life because I'm afraid of a certain thing that was passed on about a MyLab and then an angel coming to protect. Can angels, are angels really aliens? And we think they're angels, and we have to ask that question too. But I've spoken to many people who've had, let's say, spiritual warfare battles where they prayed for protection and Archangel Michael came. And, you know, several people who describe the same kind of thing. And I think there are beings who do come and do battle and are here for certain reasons. And then they can be called upon. Yeah, I mean, where let's say someone was going to die and then some being magically appears, and he appears human, and he's there to help, and then he disappears, and you know it was an angel. It was somebody who knew it was going to happen and came and intervened right at that moment, came in and out of time, did what they had to do, and left. So we know these things do happen.
It is really exciting on some level, too. And I commend you for your work because I know this isn't easy. And although it could be really intriguing, it's still a very specific corner of research that has yet to really reach out and broaden and get more people interested.
Yeah. I just think it's because of the relationship thing, and maybe it's because I'm a woman and I tend to look at things. I mean, I'm also a scientist, but I like to look at, well, wait, what's going on underneath here? What's going on with the relationships and all these hidden dynamics and hidden ways in which these beings are interfering and affecting us that's not really being talked about, because some people think the nuts and bolts scientific, you know, you have to see it to believe it is the only proof, but there's so much more going on in the hidden worlds of all these dynamics and how they interplay with each other. And I think that's important.
Right. And there's just a handful of female researchers in this area. One of your colleagues, the late Barbara Bartholik. Can you tell listeners about her work as a UFO investigator and your work with her?
Well, I feel very lucky to have met her, and she was someone that was very influential to me, but not only as a researcher, but as a friend, as someone who really helped me out in at a time of crisis several times. So it was her that really helped me in many ways, and I think her research actually started out where I know that she worked early on with some of Jacques Vallée's work, where she did not only investigations, but aerial, I think she got involved with aerial photographs of places over the Midwest where people paid to get their farms photographed, or they sold pictures of aerial photographs where they rode around in planes and were able to see things from an aerial view. And then she might have observed UFOs or came across UFOs during that time in her life and investigated UFOs and then the abduction phenomena, and then learned more about that through hypnotic regressions with people. So she has a long history of research in that area where she, you know, worked with Jacques Vallée for a little bit of that time. And of course, Carla Turner was one of her proteges, because I think they lived, well, they lived not far from each other. I think Carla Turner was in Arkansas at the time, and Barbie lived in Oklahoma. So they got a lot of the Midwest cases. So, but I really liked Barbie's work because she got down to details that other people weren't really ready to disclose publicly because they probably were afraid of their reputations, or it was considered too fringe or, you know, not ordinary. But she got good details and just told it like it was. And she saw a lot of things about the reptilian involvement and what she called the reptilian invasion before others were even talking about that. They were just talking about alien grays and some of the more standard things. And she was even poo-pooed off stage one time at a conference where a very well-known person who was in the disclosure movement basically claimed there was no such thing as evil aliens or reptilians, which, of course, is not true. So, you know, she got a lot of flack, like Carla Turner did, for disclosing the more negative and outlandish kind of aspects and what we call some of the high strangeness things that happened in the dramas of these people's lives. So she had a deeper insight, in my view.
Yes, that was some of the reason why they got all that interference, is because they were telling another side of the story. You're right about that. Barbara made an important correlation with the methamphetamine use and how the user would tune into the realm of reptilians.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I guess she had quite a few people who would come to her, and you know, like a wave. And she had a lot of biker clients as well, or people who, let's say, weren't normally alien abductees, who had the histories, but maybe after they got involved with drug use and excessive crank or methamphetamine use, they were opened up to the realm of reptilian possession and obsessions and sudden sexual perversions and types of things that only happened after these doorways were opened through methamphetamine. And so these people seem to open up their, I don't know, their perceptions were changed after they took this drug. It opened up their ability to actually get in that same frequency and observe these beings, and these beings were able to enter through, you know, taking meth too many times. So actually James Bartley did some work with that as well and reported that in some articles, where he talked with clients who were involved with that and, you know, the darker side, basically. So that does happen.
What do you think is going on there with the frequency of speed, right? What's the effect of meth, and why is there a connection there?
I think it just somehow opens up a doorway, and I think Barbie described it as it puts you on the same frequency level of these beings, and but it also can open you up to actually perceiving their presence, because your brain is on this frequency of, I don't know if it's heightened perception or it's a certain frequency where, I don't know, it just happens. And I know that I've talked to people who were on meth and crack where they would have these extraordinary, actually precognitive and psychic things happen, where they would become suddenly like telepathic and really psychic while they were on meth. But it also opened them up to like these reptilian abductions. So it's pretty creepy. But I know that different kinds of drug use can open up windows, like different hallucinogenic things. And this is known with shamans who maybe use certain drugs to open up perceptions to other dimensions. And then this can happen actually with excess addictions or even alcoholism or any other kind of drug, where if you have your consciousness affected that much, it actually opens doorways for a type of possession or parasitism. So this is not just methamphetamine. I think this can happen with other drugs, especially alcohol, like in alcoholic blackouts. You know, you can have entities enter someone and make them do something, and then they won't remember what they did.
Really good point there, Eve.
Yeah.
Okay, now getting back to Barbara's work, she did reveal some other very interesting relationships with the New Age realm, and she investigated an area of multiple abductions, I believe, and it happened to be around where this New Age church was holding events, and she had a very interesting experience. Can you tell listeners about what had occurred there and what she went through?
Yeah, you know, I found out about this when I went. I attended a conference where she was a speaker, and this is rare. She didn't go to too many conferences to present. But I went to a conference in Memphis, and I'm not even sure what year it was, but it was around 2000, the early 2000s, and James Bartley, my colleague, was there, and some other people that I know, and it was a small little get-together where Barbara was going to present some of her work, where she investigated what she calls a UFO invasion, where there was multiple sightings and encounters, you know, that were related to UFOs in a certain area of the Pacific Northwest. And this was back probably in 89 in the early 90s, where there was a wave of activity. And what she was getting is reports of not only the sightings, but people having encounters or missing time. So she actually went in to investigate, to do many hypnotic regressions and, you know, witness accounts of what happened. So as part of this, actually, she went and did several regressions, and I believe she videotaped and audiotaped several. And, of course, came to find out that there was a lot of reptilian things behind the screen memories and some of the things that people reported, including in this particular town, that there was people having the love obsession phenomena, where after this UFO wave and several encounters, then, you know, on the aftermath of that, you know, some of them wouldn't have this sudden love obsession with somebody else who wasn't their husband or wife, you know, and that was just part of what was happening. So apparently she showed her research of, I guess, one of the people that she interviewed. It was just one videotape that she brought. So it turned out that when she went to investigate this area and talk to the people, on her way back, she probably had a stack of, I guess we would call them video cassettes in those days, of recordings of many of the different regressions that she did, and that there was a cult leader who was, I guess, I don't know if it was the second in command or one of these people who was a cult leader, a helper, or I don't know what you'd call their role or their title, but this person did not want Barbara to bring back the video cassettes of all her regressions or reveal what really happened, and basically threatened her that she would not be able to go back to Oklahoma if she didn't hand over all her video cassettes of her regressive testimonies. So she had no choice but basically hand over most except one, and she actually was able to bring one back. And so she reported this to us. Nobody wanted to believe it, okay, because there was at this particular conference in Memphis, there was like a well-known channeler who was there and channeling, you know, this positive Space Brother stuff. So when she presented her testimony of basically, you know, there's a lot of reptilian crap going on in this UFO invasion where this cult leader was in this well-known area, by the way, and, you know, basically saying that these are the Space Brothers visiting, you know, raising your consciousness, this and that, and putting this positive spin, all the while that Barbara's getting these regressive testimonies of all this other stuff that did not match what the guru was saying.
Right.
Okay? So that's why they didn't even want her to report what was happening. They basically stopped her. So anyway, so she reported this at the Memphis conference, and, you know, there was this a channeler who was there, typical at that time, you know, positive New Age channeler, you know, Space Brother, good boys, there's no such thing as negative aliens, but it couldn't be them, you know, and stomped out and walked out. But at that particular conference, both Barbie and I had some kind of something happen during the night. And Barbie actually woke up and had several horrible bruises on her body, but didn't remember what exactly happened. And I only remember the horrific, what I call night terror, which is when they come, let's say, it's so terrifying that you literally black out and you just don't remember anything. And so something happened at that Memphis conference, and whoever it was, they did not like what she shared about the basically the negative reptilian element of what was going on in abductions, you know, hiding behind some of the Space Brother stuff that this guru was promoting. James Bartley actually wrote about that in one of his articles that's called The Legacy of Barbara Bartholik. It's actually quite funny and humorous, and, you know, a lot of his memoirs of, you know, the private conversations that he had over the years with Barbie. And, of course, I did too, you know, with many, many conversations over the years about some of the things that really happened that others just aren't talking about. And they're not writing about it.
It's a great article. And
yeah, it was good.
I'm glad you sent it to me. And it's an interesting detail about while she's at one of those events at the New Age Church, the group, they were all blindfolded, and the leader was walking through.
And this was something that is so funny because we were both at the same conference, James and I, and James got more detail and probably remembered some that I didn't, but apparently Barbie, I guess, went to one of these, this guru channeler's private meetings where I guess the guru told everybody in the audience to put a blindfold on, and that during this walkthrough of the audience that she would be doing some kind of scan or healing energy, of transmission of healing energy or whatever it was. And so Barbie decided to peek out of her little blindfold thing and look at the channeler, and saw that, you know, the eyes of this person was just completely red, glowing like it wasn't human that was, you know, inhabiting this body when she was channeling, or whoever this person was. That kind of creeped her out, that, you know, there's a non-human alien entity working through this person, acting as some kind of benevolent guide, and it's really one of these, like, nasty, deceitful, whatever, reptilian beings. She thought it was reptilian.
Mm. I wonder how often this occurs, and if it is occurring to this day, or
yes.
It's manifested,
yes,
in something else.
Oh, very much so. In fact, a lot of my reports are from people who've had personal relationships with certain people who may be, you know, acting as gurus or powerful religious leaders or healers or magicians or shamans or whatever. And they may have had what I call a love-bite relationship with one of these people, or they're on the psychic feeding end of one of these psychic vampires who are playing guru, right? Because they're overshadowed by an entity that uses them as a host to feed through other people or feed on other people.
Oh.
So I get a lot of these reports, and you know, I can't say who these people are that are being reported as these psychopathic psychic vampires, but there's a lot of them out there. You know, and they play like they're the good guy, and they do infest the New Age spiritual circles quite a bit.
So when people are reaching out to you, you must collect a lot of data. Is there some pattern that you're seeing now that is quite disturbing in this area?
Well, yes. It probably came through in my second book, The Dark Side of Cupid, where I was able to kind of narrow in on a type of report that I was getting a lot in terms of not only interference in relationships where, let's say, there's a love obsession or there's a psychic vampirism or energy vampirism going on that maybe is a third-party entity type of thing, right, like I described before. But another thing that, you know, of course there's a lot of disturbing things, but I call it the targeted individual syndrome, and what happens with people who start to wake up, or if they report things, and sometimes they just seem to be some kind of experiment. But the targeted individual attacks are getting more and more frequent by people in the research community, as well as those who have had some kind of experience. Maybe if it was MKUltra, and they're trying to break programming, and they're trying to get away, or whatever it is. There's a lot of that covert kind of occult technology going on to interfere with people that whoever these occult secret groups are, they do not want them to speak, or they just don't want them out there. So they slowly are killing people off through horrid torture, put it bluntly. And it's happening more and more. And there are people who are reporting about, you know, targeted individuals and the kind of technologies they're using, you know, like voice-to-skull technology and, you know, microwaves and radiation and all kinds of different things are happening that are just pretty, it's getting bad, you know? It's kind of scary.
And it's suspected that it's because of the targets are waking up out of something, or they realize, maybe they haven't been involved in anything, but they realize something is going on and they're in an influential position to say something about it.
Yeah, I mean, whistleblowers were usually the ones first targeted, as well as MKUltra survivors or victims who were waking up and trying to get away from the program they were in, and they would be targeted. And unlike bloodline families where they were trying to get away from what their families were trying to make them do, then they would be targeted throughout different times in their life through doctors, dentists, employers, lovers, you know, home, I don't know, whatever. They're different capacities that they would be harangued and harassed by, including what I call the hosted individual. They would always be coming into contact with some kind of person that was completely possessed by one of these dark entities working through them, as if there's a secret network of them going, basically working in society in conjunction with certain secret societies. So what we're finding, I mean, it's clearly, you know, there's some people who are possessed and partially possessed, and that's what they do. They act under the compulsion of the higher-ups that are working through them. They're basically just puppets for these high-level entities like winged serpents, reptilians, and Dracos that are working their agenda through the human population and secret societies, as well as some military factions and political factions. So we're seeing that now. There's just an occult angle to it, you know? It's not something that I like to think about all the time, let's put it that way.
Well, it's not very uplifting, because I tried to add in on the show, what can you do to either protect yourself or just, you know, get away from this. But I feel it's important to identify some of the issues to begin to understand, so you're not blindsided by a situation.
Right. I mean, and I write about that in The Dark Side of Cupid in terms of awareness and healing and recovery and learning how to set appropriate boundaries and listening to, let's say, red flags in your heart and your gut and your what is your spirit telling you? Because when we're in touch with our spirit and our true intuition, it will actually guide us to what we need to do, or maybe people we should avoid or jobs we shouldn't take, so that when we listen to that, we can maybe steer ourselves around from some of these dangerous people or organizations or events. And it's good to do that and to strengthen that connection so that we have that innate intuition and power to work with. And part of actually Malanga's work, as well as, you know, the work of holographic kinetics, is pretty incredible in terms of when we learn how to connect with our spirit, which is the powerful, eternal part of who we are, that gives us the power and the awareness to learn how to navigate life in a much better way, in a safer way, and learning what the rules of the game really are instead of being victim to what so much we find in our lives without having known what the rules are. And I think a lot of people, we don't know what the rules of engagement are in these other finer spiritual realms, because many of our religious systems and metaphysical, let's say a lot of the New Age stuff, it's mixed with truth and corruptions, so that we may not see what we need to see, and so we remain victims without realizing that we are. So it's learning the rules of how things really work, and then connecting with the powerful part of who we are to basically get out from under that. So sometimes that means, you know, you lose friends, but you get new ones that are even better.
Has that happened to you, Eve?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. And learning how to really heal from my own wounds as well and what I grew up with. And, you know, many of us are conditioned to believe certain things based on how our culture raises us, or religious beliefs, or, you know, anything about male-female relationships, whatever, that, you know, we have to relearn some things so that we, you know, don't set up patterns in our lives that set up to be victims. And just relearning and healing and being honest and finding others to be honest with.
This is a very unique area of research and work, and it's really fascinating. We could just keep talking about this material. I have a copy of your book from that you signed in the year 2000.
Well, I'm glad you gave me opportunity just to speak freely and very open-minded. So, yeah, it could be a difficult subject, but really it does have a positive ending, because we learn so much about ourselves as well, you know. So
That's absolutely true. You're right about that. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again next Monday, 10 p.m.